Well, we're continuing on here in 2 Corinthians, our study here, verse by verse, as we go through the book. And we've made it through. We'll be entering chapter 9 now. You may remember that chapters 8 and 9 deal with this offering that Paul is trying to collect for the needy saints in Jerusalem. He's talking to a church in Corinth, which is in Achaia, which is in the southern part of Greece. And he's also mentioned the Macedonians, which are about 200 miles north of there. And these churches were agreeable to participating in this offering that Paul is collecting for the saints in Jerusalem. Now, of course, the saints in Jerusalem are Jewish believers. The saints in Greece are Gentile believers. And oftentimes these two groups of people don't get along very well. But Paul knows that if the Gentiles contribute to the needs of the Jews, that could bring them into closer harmony and unity. And so he wants to help these people to make this decision to participate in this offering. And so this is what the two chapters, 8 and 9, are really all about. One of the things that we see in the collection for the saints is in churches today, they often participate in fundraisers. In fact, I would guess that most of the churches here in town, or many of them, have various fundraisers. In fact, one of the Catholic churches in town, one of the big ones, every year has, I think, an international food festival or something like that, if you remember seeing the advertisements for that. And I believe as part of that, they have a beer tent. So you go to church to buy beer to make money for the church. Well, that's kind of an unusual thing, I guess, from our perspective, from a Baptist perspective, buying alcohol for the benefit of the church. The Lutherans do that as well, though, from what I understand. They have a wine and cheese tasting fundraising event. And so I suppose if you need to sell alcohol to make money, you know, for your church, I guess that's what they do. I find that rather inconsistent, you might say, with what the Bible says about alcohol. Many churches have fundraising events, and I'm not saying that these fundraisers are necessarily evil or sinful or unorthodox. Of course, we don't find fundraising events in the Bible. What we find is the generous giving of the people, really, is what funds the work of the church. And so this is what Paul is trying to encourage the people there in Corinth to be involved with. They had made a promise. They had said that they would be interested in participating in this offering the last time Paul had mentioned it. But as of yet, they hadn't collected anything. They hadn't sent anything in. And so Paul is talking here about the fact that he's going to be sending some people. Well, actually, he's already sent some people. The men who brought this letter that we're reading right here, 2 Corinthians, the men who brought that to the people at Corinth, are now going to be collecting or helping the people there in Corinth to collect the funds. So Paul says he's eventually going to show up with some other people, and they will go ahead and take these funds then and bring them back to the poor saints in Jerusalem. So this is all in preparation for this collection of the offering, Paul showing up there to get it and then take it back to them. In this passage, I think what we find here are some practical suggestions for how we should give. Now, if you're like me, you'd rather not hear about giving. We'd rather not have to discuss money at all. And I'm not all that happy about bringing it up or talking about money. Frankly, I don't really talk a whole lot about money, normally speaking. But these two chapters, 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, deal with it extensively. And we're simply going through these passages. So today, I think in this passage, we find several practical principles or guidelines for giving. Guidelines or principles that tell us how we ought to give today as well. So let's consider then what the text tells us about giving to the work of the Lord. First of all, in verse 1 of chapter 9, "Now concerning the ministry to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you." First of all, I think we can say we should not have to say anything about it. He's mentioning this ministry to the saints, or this offering that he's collecting, and he's saying it's superfluous for me to write. This word superfluous means not necessary or not required. I think the sense that I get from this is that Paul would rather not say anything about it. Wouldn't it be nice if saying anything about money were superfluous? That is not necessary. Of course, later on today, just in a few minutes, we'll be having our quarterly business meeting, and we will say a few things about money. We will have a report. We'll have a budget. We'll have a statement of how the money was spent over the last quarter, how the money came in and how some of it was spent. And so, to me, I would rather not have to say anything about it. Wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to say anything about money? We didn't have to have quarterly meetings. We didn't have to have budget records. We didn't have to have a report on the money or the spending of it. To me, if everything just went along, the salaries were paid and the missionaries were paid and the bills were paid and we never had to say anything about money, I would be happy about that. But of course, that would be maybe in a perfect world, we wouldn't have to say anything about it. But of course, we don't live in a perfect world. We live in the kind of a world where we want to be transparent. We want to make these reports. We want to show people what happened to the money that they gave, where it went, how it was spent. And so we need in our world to make these reports. We need to talk about money from time to time. Now, hopefully, we don't have to harass people about it. We probably know that in some churches, they talk about money almost every Sunday. They make people fill out, you know, contribution cards, and if you promise to give a certain amount, they're going to come knocking at your door, or you're going to get a phone call or a text or an email about the fact that you promised to give this much and you haven't been giving. And they're very much more upfront about encouraging and demanding that people give. There are some churches even that make you give. I mean, when you become a part of that church, you are essentially saying you're going to tithe. You're going to give 10% of your income to the work of the church. You're agreeing to do that when you join the church. Well, we don't need to do that. The Lord has been very gracious. People have been very generous in their giving, very sacrificial. And I don't want to harp on money all the time, and I don't think we have to if we follow some of these guidelines. We shouldn't have to say anything about it. That's what Paul means by it's superfluous. It's not really necessary for me to talk about this. Of course, he goes on to talk about it for two chapters, but he's saying almost, I wish I didn't have to say anything about it, but I'm going to say a few things about it, and that's kind of where we are this morning. So hopefully we wouldn't need to say anything about it. Secondly, we should know the purpose for it. And again, verse 1, he calls it the ministering to the saints. Now concerning the ministering to the saints, what is this offering for? What's the purpose? Why should we give? Because it's ministering to the saints. The word for ministry here is just service. In fact, it's the root word for deacon, diaconia, service. And it simply means anything really done for the service of the Lord, particularly here in the context of the church. This is service for the saints. If you look at chapter 8, verse 4, he uses a similar language there, chapter 8, verse 4, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift of the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. So this is the offering that he's talking about, he's collecting for these poor saints in Jerusalem. And as they contributed to that, they would be in the fellowship, in a partnership for the serving of the saints. And so as we contribute to the offering, when we put the money in the plate or we send our money or however we contribute, we should recognize that this is what we are doing. We're serving the Lord by serving the saints, serving God's people. How do we serve the Lord? Well, usually it's serving God's people. And so as we contribute, we are doing that. We are fellowshipping, we are partnering together with others to serve God by serving his people. And so the money, of course, goes to various things, but ultimately it goes for the Lord's work. And we trust that when we participate in that, we are serving God by serving his people. So we know the purpose for it. We should also have the right attitudes about it. Let's go on to verse 2. For I know your willingness, about which I boast of you to the Macedonians, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has stirred up the majority. So the attitudes here, he mentions different things about the attitude that the people had toward it. He says, you're willing. We know your willingness. This word willingness refers to eager desire, enthusiasm, or readiness. Now, we might say that we're willing to do something and really not be all that enthusiastic about it. When my wife puts some broccoli on my plate, I'm willing to eat it, but I'm really not all that enthusiastic about it. There are many things that we do that we are willing to do, I guess, for various reasons, but we're really not enthusiastic. This word willingness here means more, something a little bit more positive than simply willing to do it. It is an enthusiasm. It's an eagerness to do it. They had been enthusiastic about this project. Paul had told them about the poor saints in Jerusalem, and they were on board. They were eagerly enthusiastic about getting involved with this. They had been ready. It says, I boast to you to the Macedonians that Achaia, now Achaia is just the region where Corinth is. Achaia is the southern part of Greece. That's where Corinth is. So he's saying the Corinthians, essentially. Achaia was ready a year ago. So remember that Paul had talked about this offering. The people had essentially promised that they would be involved. They were ready to do that. And in fact, he had boasted to the Macedonians. Remember, Macedonian churches are about 200 miles north. He had boasted to them, and they wanted to get on board because they heard that the Corinthians were going to be on board with this. So they were ready to do this. They were on board. They were ready to participate. And they even had zeal at the end of verse 2. Your zeal has stirred up the majority. Zeal here is a word that means something like devotion or deep concern. They had heard about this offering for the poor saints in Jerusalem, and they were deeply moved. We might even say emotionally moved or emotionally influenced. They wanted to do this. They were stirred emotionally to be involved with this offering. So their initial attitude toward this offering was eager, desire, readiness, and deep concern. They'd heard about the needs that were represented by those saints in Jerusalem, and they wanted to get on board. They were deeply concerned for these people, and they agreed to participate. Well, that's the kind of attitude that we should have as well. I hope that all of us are sensitive to the needs that we hear about, especially about those who are engaged in Christian service. We should be willing, ready, and eager in our giving. Well, sadly, I think, practically speaking, or if we were to be honest with ourselves, oftentimes we are sad, we are reluctant or sorrowful in our giving. When we think about having to give or giving in the offering, it's not eagerness, it's not enthusiasm. Most of the time, perhaps at least for some of us, it is the idea, well, I have to give this money to the Lord and I don't get to spend it on myself. There's not an eager enthusiasm about giving to the work of the Lord. It's more like a reluctance and a sorrow that we have to give to the Lord instead of using that money for ourselves. We often don't think about the blessing of giving. We only think about the fact that we can't use that money for ourselves. But we ought to think about the blessing of giving. Our attitude toward giving should be eagerness, readiness, and enthusiasm, because we know that the money that we provide is going to go for the work of the ministry, the fulfillment of the Great Commission. People are going to be saved. Churches are going to be started. Those servants of God are able to pay their bills and do the work because we help fund the work to go on. Fourthly, we should be exemplary in it. Notice going on in verse 2, he says, "Your zeal has stirred up the majority." The Corinthians there have stirred up the majority in the sense of stimulate or rouse or provoke or spur on to action. The other churches in the region had heard that the Corinthians will be involved in this. Paul had said, you know, the Corinthians are ready to give. And so these other churches as well were spurred on or stirred up to action as well. One of the reasons for the generosity of these other churches was that they're following the example of the Corinthians. Well, when we come to setting an example in our giving, well, we know that we don't usually tell other people what we're giving. In other words, we don't know. I don't know how much you people give. Maybe other people in your family know. It could be that even people in your family don't know how much you're giving. So the idea of, I'm going to set an example in my giving, how? By telling everybody else what I'm giving? No, we don't set the example in that way. In fact, the Bible tells us to do our alms or our charitable giving in secret. Remember, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, don't trumpet, don't blast the trumpet when you're giving your alms. In fact, he says, don't even let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. So in our almsgiving, we're not supposed to, you know, wave our check around or something like that before we put it in the offering. We're not supposed to go around telling everybody how much we give. So how then can we be examples to others in our giving? Well, I think in our own families, we can be examples. Probably your children know if you are giving generously and sacrificially to the work of the Lord. They may not know how much you're giving, but if you train your children right, they know that you are giving to support the work of the Lord. Perhaps you train your children with the money that they receive, that they learn to give a portion of the money that they receive through maybe work projects or maybe through birthday gifts or things like that. The children learn to give because you require them to give a portion of their income to the work of the Lord. So you can set an example within your own family of generous giving by training your children in that way. And even as a church, I think we can be exemplary to other churches in our giving. Now, again, how would other churches know how much we're giving toward missions? Well, one thing, I mean, we have our missionary display back there. It shows that we have a number of missionaries that we are supporting. And it could be that other churches, you know, other people from churches see that we are supportive of missionaries. We are also part of the Wisconsin Fellowship of Baptist Churches, and every year they produce an annual report. And the annual report has a record of how much each church that's part of that organization gave to that organization to support the work over the year. So we get this, or everybody who's there at the annual meeting gets this record, a report of how much everybody gave to support the WFBC that year. And you know, there are a lot of churches, well, there's some churches that give nothing, even though they're part of the WFBC, they give nothing to the organization. Some churches give some churches give a lot. So as you look at the list of the churches and how much they're giving, it can be an example to see, okay, here's a church like ours in another town, and they're giving, let's say they're giving more than we do. Or here's a large church and they're contributing a lot. Well, that's great. You can see how much some of these other churches are giving, and that can spur us on to, you know, follow that example. But how about this? This is kind of a thought experiment that I thought of. If everyone in church gave the way that you do, that is, if you actually set the example in giving, if somehow, now of course we know that they don't, but let's say people found out how much you give. If they followed your example in giving, what would be the result? What would the financial condition of the church be like if everyone gave like you do? Now we know that we all make different amounts in income, so I'm not saying they gave the same amount, but let's say they gave as a percentage of their income, they followed your example. Would that be a benefit to the church, or would that be a detriment to the church? Would the church starve if everybody gave like you did, or would the church prosper financially if everybody gave like you did? Would the work of the Lord be positively or negatively affected if everyone gave the way that you do? Well, even though nobody actually, probably, nobody knows how much we're giving, still, we should give as if, I think, we were trying to set a good example for others. Let's go on to number 5 then. In verse 3, he says, "Yet I've sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this respect, that, as I said, you may be ready." We may need to be reminded about it. In other words, we may need some help or some help in arranging our giving. Note the word yet. He said, I don't need to write or talk about this. Yet, he says, I've sent the brethren. So although Paul hopes that he really doesn't need to say anything about this, he's still sending the brethren to come to the church there to arrange for this offering. They seem to be willing and enthusiastic at the beginning, but they had not followed through. They had not actually made a contribution as of yet. So Paul sends these brethren. In fact, these are the very same people who brought this book, 2 Corinthians, to the people there at Corinth. So he sent the brethren. Notice in verse 5, he mentions them again. "Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand." So the people there at Corinth, although they had a good attitude, you might say, at the beginning, still needed a little bit of help in arranging their affairs. So Paul says he doesn't want there to be a collection sort of offhandedly when he arrives. He'd rather have everything ready and set up. What seems to be happening is that these men are there at the church. They brought this letter. They're going to help these people arrange, you know, set up the offering, collect it and everything. And then Paul is going to come with some other people. He's going to come and actually get the offering and then go back to Jerusalem with it. We, like these Corinthian people, may need a little bit of help in arranging our affairs so that we can give. Everybody, no matter what your income, should be able to give at least something if we arrange our affairs properly. If we feel like we can't give, it's because we have not really used discipline and self-control in our spending habits. Oftentimes it's because we're not very good money managers. We're not really taking care of our financial affairs very well. That's the reason that we can't give like we ought to. So it may be that we need somebody to come along and help us a little bit to arrange our affairs, to arrange our financial house, you might say, to get our financial house in order, to bring a little bit of discipline and control into our spending so that we have extra to give to the work of the Lord. I would invite you, if you have that kind of a problem, I would be more than happy to talk with anybody about your financial condition and helping anybody to arrange their financial affairs so that they have a little extra to give to the work of the ministry. Some of us might need a little help in that regard. Let's go on to the sixth principle here. We don't want to be unprepared or ashamed about it. Although the Corinthians had been eager and concerned about this offering originally, Paul is concerned that his confidence might be in vain. Notice verse 3. Our boasting of you should be in vain. This word means empty or useless or hollow. So he was worried that they had made this promise, but they would neglect to actually come through, or they would forget about it. You know how sometimes we show some eager enthusiasm about maybe a project or something, but then time goes by and we kind of forget a little bit about it? We said that, oh yes, we'd like to contribute, we'd like to be involved, but then the time comes and we haven't done anything about it yet. Well, it seems as if that's the problem with the Corinthians here. And so Paul was concerned about their supposed eagerness and their desire would not result in the offering being collected. Somebody put it this way, the boasting would prove hollow if, through the lack of their necessary organization, the Corinthians failed to translate their enthusiasm for a project into action. So that, I think, can be a problem or a danger that we fail to translate our enthusiasm into action. We say that we want to do something or we say that we're going to be involved, but then when the time comes to actually do the thing, we may not be so interested in doing it. And so that then would lead to the possibility of embarrassment. So notice in verse 4, lest if some of the Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to mention you, should be ashamed of this confident boasting. So the embarrassment would be if Paul shows up there with these other people, including the Macedonians, if they show up and the Corinthians are not ready with this offering. Because remember that Paul had boasted to the Macedonians, this other group of churches 200 miles away, that the Corinthians were ready and able and willing and eager to participate. And so one of the reasons that the Macedonians gave so generously, even out of their poverty, was the fact that they knew that the Corinthians were giving. So imagine these same Macedonians who themselves had sacrificed so much to be part of this offering, they show up in Corinth and they're not ready to give. Well, we thought you were ready a year ago. We thought you were going to participate. And we, the Macedonians, could say, we gave out of our poverty, and here you are as prosperous people, and you're not giving anything? Well, that would be very embarrassing for the Macedonians, for Paul, for the Corinthians. Everybody would be, as it says here, ashamed of themselves, because Paul had boasted about these people and how they were ready to contribute. So he didn't want the church to be caught off guard. He'd sent these people, they're going to help you arrange this offering so that when we arrive, Paul and these other guys, when they arrive to actually collect the offering, they're going to be ready for it. They've already collected it, it's already in hand, and there's no messing around with it. Well, you know, frankly speaking, lack of generous giving should be an embarrassment. Well, of course, normally nobody else knows what we are giving. It is a private matter. But if you're either not giving at all or you're giving a very little amount when you could give more, frankly, that should be an embarrassment. Every year here at church, we give out a giving report for each individual who's contributed. As long as you've contributed in a way that's accountable, that is, if you put your money into a little giving envelope or if you've given by check or electronic funds transfer, anywhere that the church can, you know, keep track of your giving, at the end of the year, you get a report on how much you've given. And so you should be able to look at that report and not be embarrassed about it. I mean, if you're making many thousands of dollars every year and you look at that report and you've given whatever, a very, very small amount, well, that frankly ought to be embarrassing. We should be able to look at that report at the end of the year and not be proud about it, certainly, but at least not be embarrassed to say that there's no way that this amount of giving was a generous amount, or there's no way that this was a sacrificial amount. We ought to be able to look at that report at the end of the year and say, okay, this was a substantial amount, depending upon my income. I'm not ashamed of the fact that this is how much I gave. If we're giving so little, frankly, it ought to be embarrassing. We ought to be ashamed of the fact if we only give a very little amount. And I think I've mentioned before the statistics about giving are quite embarrassing, if you will. The average church goer Now, this would be across all churches, all denominations, anybody who goes to church. The average churchgoer gives, on average, the adults give about 4% of their income. Those who tithe are about 5 in 100. 5 in 100 people tithe. I think the average giving, I think I've mentioned before, is like $17 a week. That is embarrassingly and shamefully low. If what we understand about biblical giving is, if we understand that properly, to give generously, to give sacrificially, to say that we're going to give 4% or less of our income, or a very small percentage of our income, you know, frankly, that is embarrassingly small. We want to give a reasonable amount. We want to prepare ourselves to give that amount. In fact, notice the words that he uses here. He uses this word prepare several times. In fact, he uses four different words here for either being prepared or lack of preparation. Notice at the end of verse 3, he says, that is, as I said, that you may be ready. That's a word that means prepared. And then in verse 4, lest they come with me and find you unprepared. That's the danger. They're not ready for this offering, so unprepared. That would make Paul's boasting about them shameful. Instead, in verse 5, I thought it necessary to send these brethren and prepare your generous gift ahead of time. And then at the very end of verse 5, or I should say toward the middle there of verse, toward the end of verse 5, it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not grudging obligation. So I think there's an obvious emphasis here on the idea of being ready to give. We should prepare ourselves to give in the sense of thinking about it carefully and giving purposefully or intentionally. The famous verse in verse 7, we'll get there next week, Lord willing. Let each one give as he purposes in his heart. So this talks about preparation. This talks about readiness. This talks about intentionally and purposefully giving. Giving should be something we think about and prepare for, not something that's just off the cuff or done kind of unintentionally, done thoughtlessly. You come to church and you realize, oh, they're going to take an offering. I had no idea that they were going to take an offering today. And so you open your wallet. What do I have down in there? And you search around. Oh, here's a couple of bucks or whatever. It's as if you didn't know that they're going to take an offering. For me, if I go to an event that I have no idea that they're going to take an offering, I feel a little bit awkward because I'm not prepared for that offering. I'd rather be prepared for the offering. I want to think ahead about it. I want to pray about it. I want to consider, you know, what my income is and how much I can give and all those kinds of things. And especially when it comes to the work of the Lord, where you're attending services at church regularly, our idea should be that we are intentional, we're purposeful, we're thoughtful about it. It's not something we do just sort of like off the cuff when we come to church. Well, do I have any checks left in my checkbook? How much money is rolling around in my pocket or my wallet? Rather, we think about it ahead of time. What is my income? What are my expenses? How much can I give? We are intentional and purposeful about it. We are ready, as he says here, planning for it. Giving is much more meaningful and satisfying when we plan for it ahead of time. So this is where we have to take some thought and consideration for it and then determine, as it says in verse 7, like I just read, purpose in your heart how much you're going to give. And I'm not saying that there's a stipulated amount that you have to give. You purpose in your heart. You do it before the Lord. You pray about it and trust the Lord and do what you think the Lord would have you to do. And I'm not saying that there's a magic number that you have to give as a percentage. I think, as I've said before, I think the tithe is a very good kind of a point either to aim for or to start at. But as far as what each person gives, that's between them and the Lord. But we should be prepared for it. We should be thoughtful and organized about our giving. It should not be something just off the cuff or something we haven't thought about. Think about it ahead of time, prepare for it ahead of time, so that when you get to the service, the part of the service where we give, we do it as an act of worship. That's what it is. We are worshiping the Lord with our tithes and offerings. And so it should be intentional, it should be thoughtful, we should be ready to do it. We should also fulfill our promises about it. Notice he says in verse 5, prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised. Again, Paul had been there with the Corinthians. He talked about this. They had been eager, enthusiastic. They wanted to participate. They had made a promise that they would. And so now Paul is kind of concerned that they haven't actually followed through yet on this gift that they wanted to make. And so Paul says, you'd make this promise and you should fulfill it. Now, of course, I don't know what you've promised in your heart to give. No, that's a private matter. You may share it, you know, as spouses or with a family. But ultimately speaking, hopefully we come to a determination within our hearts how much we're going to give. And then we stick to that agreement or promise. If we've made a commitment to the Lord, we've promised, let's say, that we'll give a certain percentage of our income or maybe a certain amount every week or whatever it is, whatever you determine ahead of time. When you make that determination and you've made a commitment before the Lord, what should you do? You should keep that commitment. Now, I'm not saying that you might not change your commitment. Maybe through further thought and further assessment and further evaluation, you determine, well, I have to change the amount. That's fine. Nobody says that if you determine you're going to give a certain amount, you have to stay with that amount. But again, it should be a matter of thoughtful, you know, purposefulness as we go before the Lord in prayer and consideration. But if you have made that commitment to the Lord, then you ought to follow through on it. It's easy to make a commitment. It's a lot harder to follow through. But here it says, you know, follow through on your promises. You made this promise, and so go ahead and fulfill it. And finally, at the end of verse 5, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as grudging obligation. We should have the proper motivations for it. The proper motivation. Generosity should motivate us to give. We ought to be giving out of love for God and for God's people. It ought to be through generosity, not out of being commanded to give. In fact, if you check with chapter 8, verse 8, he says, I speak not by commandment. Paul didn't want to command these people so that they would give just out of obedience. He wanted them to give out of generosity. He's reminding them and gently exhorting them to follow through on their promise, but he wants them to do it out of love. He wants them to do it out of love for him and love for God and love for the church and love for the work of God. That's why we give, not out of, as he says here, grudging obligation. Giving is a much more pleasant experience if we give for the right motives and purposes. Our giving should come out of love and generosity. And so if you're, you know, when you're sitting at home or whenever it is you're writing your check or you're getting your offering ready, to do that out of love and a desire to serve God and a desire to serve God's people, it just makes the giving much more meaningful for everyone who gives. We don't want to do it, as he says here, out of grudging necessity, but instead of generosity. This word generosity is interesting. It's usually translated as blessed or blessing. It's a benefit bestowed. Giving is an act of blessing. Of course, we're blessing those who give to. We're giving to the missionaries. We're giving to the work of the Lord. Those who receive the money are blessed. Giving generously is blessing to God as well. It's an act of worship. Giving is even a blessing to ourselves. It's more blessed, Jesus said, to give than to receive. So when we give, we're bestowing a benefit. It's a blessing on other people. It's a blessing to God. It's a blessing to us. And so we keep that in mind as we give. The opposite of that would be giving grudgingly, as he says at the very end of verse 5, not as a grudging obligation. This word often is translated as covetousness, not giving out of covetousness. Now, what in the world does that mean? Well, I think the sense of the word seems to be something like that which is given under compulsion, or that which is given only grudgingly, something extorted by force. Giving in this way results in scanty contributions given grudgingly or reluctantly. One scholar translates this word as torn away from greed. Giving with a heart ensnared by greed can never receive God's approval, for greed has taken God's rightful place. And so our motivation should not be external pressure, grudging obligation. We should not feel like someone is squeezing it out of us. Do you ever pay a bill and you feel like they're just squeezing that money out of you? I have to pay, because of my situation, I have to pay estimated taxes. It doesn't just come out of my salary. I have to actually write the check, or I have to send in the money every quarterly. I have to pay my Wisconsin state taxes and federal income taxes quarterly. I have to pay. It doesn't just get deleted out of my check so I never see it. I see it, and I have to pay it. And I feel like they're squeezing me. Every time I send that money in, I feel squeezed to have to pay that tax. I'd really rather not pay the tax, as probably most of us don't want to pay the tax. But we do, we have to. And when we have to pay a bill that we'd rather not pay, at least if you're like me, we sometimes feel that we're being squeezed and forced to pay that bill. And there are some people who feel that way regarding the Lord's work as well. I don't really want to give to the Lord's service. I don't want to give to the church. I don't want to give to missions. But I'm a Christian, so I guess I have to. And so it's like, you know, squeezing that rock to get a little bit of something out of it. Each one of us has the, you know, what is our attitude? We all have the attitude that we have about giving. And it shouldn't be grudging obligation. One of the marks of covetousness, remember this word is normally translated as covetousness. One of the marks of covetousness or greed is remorseful or reluctant giving. When you love money, you're not generous. You give only because you feel an external pressure. Someone is squeezing it out of you. Someone is tearing it away from you. And when you give that way, what kind of giving do you give? Well, the next verse, sparingly. This I say, he who sows sparingly will reap also sparingly. If you're like me, you don't want to pay more than you have to. You don't want to pay more in taxes than you absolutely have to. You're squeezed only to a certain amount. That's all you're going to give. Well, that's not the way that it ought to be with giving to the Lord's work. We ought to be trying to give bountifully, not sparingly. So if you give under a feeling of grudging obligation, I would say you need to get your heart right with God. We give out of generosity. We give out of love. We give because what Christ has given us. We know his great condescension in giving us so much. He gave up everything to give us everything. And so we give out of grace, out of enthusiastic eagerness to participate in the giving, in the blessing of God. God's grace produces generosity, not grudging obligation. So I think we can look at all these principles. If we were to review all these principles, giving should be a normal part of our lives so that we are not even, there's really no need to be reminded of it. It's not necessary to remind us or to harass us or always be talking about it because giving is a normal part of life. We do it because we love the Lord, and so we don't really need to be reminded about it. We give because we want to be involved in the ministry to the saints. That's what we see, the monies, the funds that we are giving. This is a ministry. This is a service to God and to God's people, and so we want to be part of that. We should be eager, enthusiastic in our giving. Our deep concern for others should result in generous giving. We should give in a way that sets an example. Now, of course, we know that other people don't know what we're giving, but if they did, we would want to set an example. If people knew how much you were giving, would that be a good example? Would we be embarrassed about how little we give if others found out? Some of us might need help or encouragement in giving. We might need to be reminded about that. We should be thoughtful and organized in our giving. We don't want to be embarrassed by our lack of giving because we're poorly organized. So we have to plan and be ready for it. We should keep our promises about giving. If we've made a commitment to it, we should stick to that commitment. And we should have the proper motivations for giving. Generous giving should be a blessing, not a grudging obligation. Well, I think these are very practical guidelines for giving, and I hope that all of us will take them to heart. Perhaps we need to admit that we've not been following these guidelines. Perhaps some of us would be a little embarrassed about our lack of giving. I trust that the Spirit of God will work in our hearts so that we can follow these practical guidelines for generous giving. Let's close in prayer.